Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, today has been an amazing experience. I so have enjoyed talking with you about not only being an entrepreneur, the successes of an entrepreneur, but also about, you know, discussing that I really enjoy helping brands navigate the success of being on store shelves or just understanding what their channel strategy should be as they go forward in their own journey.
Welcome back to We Mentor Mondays. We've been on a hiatus during the month of July for the first time really since the pandemic, when we took a little bit of a breather to figure out what was going on. And so we thought we would let you kind of go out and socialize, kind of make up for last year's loss in July of seeing people. There's lots of weddings and birthday parties and graduations and so forth all throughout July. And so I also had a chance to kind of look at our programming, and I'm really excited for how we're rolling out the August conversations. And I think you will be too. I also have been working on my book. I've joined a writer's community, and it's been a long time in the works, but I got the support I needed, which was missing. I also have a connection to a publisher and lots of different authors as an accountability group. So my book is called We Mentor Self-Leadership Mastery, A Journey to Build Resilient Relationships with Yourself and Clients as You Redesign Your Life Work. Oh, God. It finally came together after all these years, and it's a beautiful work in progress. The practices that I'm putting in there are things that I've tried out on myself and in all the relationships that I've been in with clients and personal and professional. And so it's kind of based on all the research and all my readings and conversations with people over the years. You know, what seems to be working with people, and what are the practical things in which people turn their lives around, and how can we really expand the relationships that we have with our clients in a very, you know, special, healthy way. So today's mentor guest, I'm so excited, is a client, Ann Anderson. Yes, she and I have been working together as she's been building her business, Retail Partner Solutions, LLC. Today, she's ready to share her life and passion for retail. Anne knows a lot about the retail industry. That is why we're sharing three conversations with you. First, you will find out how she went from being a corporate executive to launching her business. In our second conversation, you will get help in getting your products into big box retailers. Anne has a ton of suggestions for you. And in our third conversation, you will learn how to up-level product brands for retail. So she's taking the mystery out of why some brands make it on the shelves and why others don't. So even if you aren't getting your products into a big box retailer, it's good to understand how retail works nowadays. So August is a great month for you to start planning forward, and that's what we're doing. So Anne, welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. Where am I finding you in Minnesota?
I'm in Excelsior. So right by Minnetonka, live here. Gosh, I've been here for probably the last 27 years. So love living in Minnesota. We have our cold winters, but we get through it.
That's right. And how are you feeling right now in this moment?
You know, I'm feeling really happy. I'm excited to be joining you, and thank you for inviting me today. It's an absolute pleasure. And, you know, feeling pretty joyful as we have a great day here in Minnesota summer.
Excellent. So just to give you a little more background about Anne, she has an MBA. She's a results-driven senior executive and retail strategist with more than 25 years of success spanning retail, consumer goods, and food and beverages. Leveraging extensive experience in strategic leadership for world-class brands and teams, Anne is a valuable asset for companies requiring retail go-to marketing strategies, brand building, guidance, mentoring, and representation to launch brands at big box retailers. Anne founded Retail Partner Solutions LLC in 2019 to further empower brands to thrive on store shelves, bridging the gap between brands and buyers. So entrepreneurs with new product brands need Anne's retail expertise, resources, and strategies that can accelerate your growth. She's a proven record of succeeding across many categories, including launches of kids' snacks, home essentials, pet, coffee, ethnic products, and beverages in Target, Walmart, Home Goods, Costco, and other local and specialty retailers, and radiates positive energy, as you'll find out. She has a focused mindset, driven commitment, and a passion for retail. So let's get started. Hey, Anne.
Hey there.
Well, what was your upbringing like? How would you describe your parents? 4 to 6 words.
My parents were wonderful. They were really caring, loving, I mean, dependable. I came from a family of strength, and they were also religious. So mom was very independent, strong. You know, my dad was more the structured, disciplined, hard worker. So I think both of them instilled so many of their different attributes and so many of different character into all of us as kids.
And what were their professions?
So my mom was a stay-at-home mom and raising three of us. And my dad was a corporate executive in IT departments. So he worked for Schlitz Brewing back in the day in Milwaukee. And then he went into commercial banking.
Oh, very cool. And what were some of your favorite things that you loved about growing up in your home?
You know, I think mostly it was so nice because we were family, right? And we enjoyed being a family. So there was a lot of eating. So whether it was Italian foods for a lot of gatherings, my mom was like very Italian. Her parents were very Italian, you know, came across from the boat. And, you know, my dad was German. So I kind of had the mixture of both. But, you know, there's so many things that I remember about growing up, especially from my mom's side because of the Italian food. I mean, my grandparents would come over to our house when we lived in Milwaukee. And, I mean, they would make homemade ravioli and gnocchi. And we had sheet pans, like, all over the bedrooms that had the homemade pasta on it. So it's just so fun to like think about some of those memories and, you know, when we did so much of the family time and the togetherness when I was younger, we ended up moving away from Milwaukee when I was in 7th grade. My dad was transferred to Sioux City, Iowa.
Oh.
Didn't know where Sioux City, Iowa was. We didn't know what we were in for. So I think it was just, you know, that's one of the changes in life that you experience.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, you move from one city to the next, you don't have friends, you build those relationships, and you start to then enjoy other pieces of life and other parts of life of where you have been and where you what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, and you also find you can also change who you are a little bit. Did you do
Absolutely.
Some things that you and I moved? So my parents moved us to a dairy farm when I was in 7th grade. And I just remember how I got into band when I wasn't normally going to go just because of the friends that I was hanging out with. And I'm like, well, that was the upside of moving.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, for me, I started gymnastics when I was in 4th grade. So I started gymnastics in Wisconsin already in 4th grade. So when I moved to Sioux City, we moved in the beginning of summer. So I immediately then went into a club.
Uh-huh.
So that started the friendships early on. So when I went into then the school in that fall, at least I knew, you know, a number of girls prior to just being, you know, starting school and knowing no one.
Yeah.
You know, I was, I don't want to say I was really good. I was fairly good as a gymnast. So at this point it was easier because I had already, everybody kind of knew who I was from a reputation standpoint, from my skill level. So that kind of helped really the friendships or knowing who I was to kind of go into school a little bit easier. Now it was a lot different for my older brother. He had a harder time, but he was also 3 years older than I was. And he was in 10th grade in high school. And then I had a younger brother who's also 3 years younger than me. And he had an easier time too, cause he was in sports. My older brother was too, but you know, it just depends on, I think, where you are and what age you are in life and how you transition it.
Yeah.
I'm also, as you like, fairly positive. I'm very positive, right? I have a positive, I'm outgoing. I'm going to, you know, really find those friends that I'm going to enjoy kind of throughout the rest of my time in a new city.
So how did your parents facilitate the transition? Did they have conversations with you all, or, and did they share what they were going through with the move? And
they did. But one of the things that, you know, as I look, it's always interesting, you know, as you reflect back on your childhood or back on what shaped you as a person. And I really can say that as a family, emotions weren't always talked about.
Yeah.
And it was more kind of a matter of fact. And I suppose that's a lot of where I get that today is some of my matter of factness. But the we didn't share kind of the whole feeling and emotion. I mean, I remember when my grandpa was really ill and he was in the hospital. We lived in Sioux City at the time. And I just remember it was the middle of the night. My parents woke us up and they're like, we need to go to Milwaukee. We need to see your grandfather before he passes. And you know, they took us out of school and we drove that 8 to 10 hours to Milwaukee. And, you know, he did end up passing. We did get a chance to see him before it happened, but it wasn't really talked about. I don't remember a crying moment. I don't remember kind of the emotion part of it.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, you bring the emotions in and as you continue on, I think as you get older, it's just that piece of me, I think, is really interesting because even with Howard, I mean, my husband, I'll tell you that I remember when we first were married and we would always go see his mom and dad and they like kiss each other before they go to bed at night, you know, just on the cheek. Yeah. And it's more of a hug or good night type of thing. Or they say, I love you frequently and often. And we didn't do that as a family. So it was just kind of, you know, you just adapt to it differently. And now I'm, you know, do that with my own kids, right? Every conversation we have, it's like, hey, I love you, you know, as we're talking and everything. But the emotion part is there today, which it wasn't as much when I was younger.
Yeah. And are you feeling like that? How does that feel for you then, doing that, changing that up in your family?
And I do it. I actually, when I talk to my mom, you know, out of the end of the conversation is, and I love you. And, you know, she says it too. Sometimes she does, sometimes she doesn't, you know, and I know the love's there. I mean, because we had the loving family. I mean, they were always there. They were super dependable. They went to all of our events. They supported us, but it just wasn't something that was said often.
Yeah. So physically they showed up, but the words weren't there. So you interpreted it, as what it was, which was love. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what could you do for hours and hours where you would lose track of time? You mentioned gymnastics was something that you kind of immersed yourself in. Did that hang with you through high school and into college?
It did. So gymnastics is something that was always a part of me. So I practice was something that I can continually do. And like most teenagers, I really enjoyed socializing and having fun with friends.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the neighbor next door, Liz. Liz had a trampoline. And we spent all day long on that trampoline, doing tricks and different games. But it was like fun. So it kind of was all about the fun and kind of enjoying.
Yeah.
Friends and what else could I do? So I did a lot of that.
Okay. And what did you learn about taking financial and emotional risks as a child and young adult in your family?
So financially, as a family, you know, I didn't ever worry. I knew we were always taken care and provided for from my mom and dad. Mm-hmm. We were kind of that average middle-class family that enjoyed, you know, what we had and what we lived for. But one of the things my parents were very adamant about early on with my brothers and I is that when we were at the age where we could get a part-time job, we got part-time jobs at 16 when we started driving and had part-time jobs throughout high school and college. And they were, in fact, in high school, I was the hostess of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yep, at the time it was called the hostess. So I came home like smelling like fried chicken all the time, which was not my favorite. Yeah. But one of the things my parents basically said was when we get our paycheck, that half would go into our savings and half would be ours to spend.
Mm.
So it kind of already like instilled and brought in that saving, that financial piece, you know, understanding money, concept of money, how you treat money, how it helps you and how it helps you grow as a person. So
yeah, and putting that discipline in place at an early age, you know,
absolutely.
Like
absolutely.
When you don't really know the value of money yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, we had family cars, so we would have to actually figure out who was taking the car when to go to that job, that part-time job. But when it was your turn and you were filling up that gas tank, you start already understanding that, yes, we had half of that that was ours, but yet certain portion of it goes to gas.
Yeah.
So you start understanding the concept, how to budget, how you look at money to kind of go forward, or what you, the things you want, and how it helped going to college too. That was kind of my fun money at college, was the portion that I made with my part-time jobs.
Yeah, you probably had a lot to pay for. I mean, you probably could pay for your schooling really easily.
That was one of, you know,
because it was cheaper.
Super, super, super blessed. That was one of the things my parents did early on, was they paid for college. And it really came from my dad's parents that paid for his college. And then he paid it forward to pay for our college. And we paid it forward then to do with that same for our kids. So it was just one of those things that was, we always wanted to do that.
You know, that's a really great family tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Of paying it forward from one generation to the next. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I can see where you came from a family of strength. There's some foundational pieces that are really helpful in building that your family is doing and carried through to the next generation. How did your family of origin handle setbacks or traumatic events?
You know, similar to what I said before, from an emotional standpoint, we didn't really talk about it as much. My dad did get laid off when he was in his 50s, I remember. And I didn't realize the impact of it, I think, then, because I was in high school, to the impact now that I am at my age, right? And things, and that happens to people over 50 all the time, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting how I look back now, and he handled it extremely well, looked for that right position, did the connecting. I mean, did all those networking events like you talk about and you're told, right? But I guess I didn't realize the impact of it until actually now I'm older and I've gone through it.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
So I find that kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And small traumas, big traumas. So traumas are body and brain's response to painful experience that can lead to our inability or ability to cope. So there's two types of traumas, the small ones and the big traumas. So the small ones could be accumulative over time, like being teased over some time, or or the incidence itself might be minor, but over time, it kind of harms and affects our self-esteem and how we are in the world and how we feel about ourselves. Did you have any of those experiences, those small traumas?
When I look at small traumas, I think I kind of chuckle about my brothers, right? Because I had two brothers who teased me all the time because, of course, I was their sister. There's one incident, and this is not a big trauma. This is a small trauma, but sometimes we joke about it being a big trauma, where they tied me to the tree in our front yard just because they could. And they did. But I think what I found was as I was teased so often and had that experience, I understood how to use it to my advantage. Meaning that because they would tease me, then I would tease them back, but in a situation where they really didn't do it. So I would tell my mom and then they would get in trouble. So
like, how long were you tied to the tree, and what would they do? Just leave you there?
They left me there. I mean, I was in grade school. So I was young. I was like under 10. And they would just leave. But it wasn't like a major deal. I think we were, you know, playing a game and they decided that they were going to tie me to the tree and they just left me there. But it wasn't like super traumatic today, but we laugh about it. Because how I ended up, as I got older, turned it around, was like I said, I would get them in trouble by saying they hit me or something when they really didn't hit me. But mom was out of the room and it gave me a chance to kind of say, I'm going to get you back.
A little payback.
Right. So there was like little traumas like that. I remember a boy in third grade. He was like, you know, taller than me. And he called me Annie Benanny all the time. And, you know, you look back at those kind of funny events of boys teasing you and how you bounce back from it or how you prove to them. I remember in fifth grade, the way they had a touch football where we had the little flag football, you know, where we had the little flags off of your pants, and they wouldn't let girls play. And I just kind of thought that was a little ridiculous. They wouldn't let girls play. And I went and told the teacher that I think girls should be able to play. And, you know, it's that whole being resilient, you know, I don't know, how do you move forward? How do you bounce back by somebody telling you you can't do it? Mm. And what motivates you to go forward?
Yeah.
So I do look back and think there was a lot of pieces of me in my younger years that I am today.
Yeah.
But you don't always think of them.
Yeah. So did your teacher say, no, you can't play, that's a boys' game?
No, they actually let us play.
Oh, they did. So you learned to speak up for what you believe in.
Yeah.
Okay. And you got reinforced for it. Nice.
Yep. And he was one of my favorite teachers, too. I had this gentleman teacher, Mr. Howard, in fifth grade, and he was great.
And then you married a Howard, so.
Yeah, I did.
good relationship with the Howards.
I did.
Did you have any big traumas or events where anyone would find disturbing?
I don't think you'd find it disturbing, but probably my biggest trauma, and I think about it all today, is I had a gymnastics injury in high school. And it's really how it shaped my life today. I was successful. It was season. I was in 10th grade. I was ranked number 15 in the state. So it was a fabulous season, my 10th grade year. And so my 11th grade year, I went into season and I had a goal to be in the top 10. The season was going well. I was well on my way. You know, depending on the meet, I had first places, or depending on the meet, I had second places. And in February, I remember, of my junior year, I was on the beam. I was competing in an event, and my foot had slipped on one of my tricks. Mm. And my trick was, I was doing like a back handspring, back tuck off the side, off the end. And because my foot slipped, it took me to the side of the beam.
Oh.
Well, you know, back in, you know, the 80s, now I'm aging myself. Back in the 80s, we didn't have mats all around the beam. You know, you had just at the
end. Oh, you're kidding. I thought,
no,
wow.
Not at that time. And so hitting the gym floor, I mean, I was able to stand up on my trick, but hitting the wood floor in a kind of a jarring type of position stripped my knee. I remember we were in Sioux Falls. I had to ice it the whole way home, cried, you know, thank goodness there was a doctor in the stands, you know, he came down. So what I thought was then just a, you know, a knee injury ended up being a torn meniscus and a little bit of a tear of an ACL. It didn't completely tear my ACL. It was just a tear of an ACL. Visiting doctors within Sioux City and getting second opinions, they really kind of recommended at that time that, you know, whether it's icing, whether it's exercise, whether it's physical therapy, I probably would have been okay to go back to the following season. So we didn't do any type of surgery. Started out my senior year season and it would give out on me. I would do a trick and it would give out on me. So I knew that kind of it was my career season. It was my gymnastics career ending injury, unfortunately. But you bounce back, right? And I cheered on the team and all the girls on the team and still stood by them. I just wasn't able to compete my senior year in high school, which was unfortunate. And it really, at that time, I mean, it derailed me.
Yeah.
But I also had the opportunity to kind of regroup, redirect, and go, okay, I'm going off to college. I'm going to succeed and I can go forward. So I taught gymnastics because I still loved it. And in college, not my entire time in college, but in the first couple of years of college I did. And it was more little kids because I enjoyed that piece of it. It was a lot of fun. But I mean, till this day, I still miss it. I mean, I didn't have surgery on my ACL and my meniscus until 8 years later. And because I probably had waited too long, there was a lot more damage internally. So, I mean, 5 years ago, I had a total knee replacement. So I'm young to be having that total knee replacement. I'm so glad though I had it today. Yes, I will probably have to go through another one in my lifetime, but it did change a lot of the things that either I wanted to be able to do or activities that I wanted to participate in.
Yeah, right. Well, you definitely have resiliency, you know, wired in how you are thinking and handle situations like that to turn it into, you know, a positive, but at the same time, realizing what you've lost. You know, that's
right.
An important skill set.
And, and I think that's part, I think it does go back to my gymnastics days, right? Where you do have a meet. You are part of a team. You're individually participating in events. You may place first or second or third or whatever number, right, for that particular event for that day.
Yeah.
But you do need to regroup and you need to bounce back and you need to have a positive attitude for the meet that's going to happen, you know, 2 days from now.
Yeah.
So, you know, as an athlete, you really do have to have a mindset of you have to be able to compartmentalize.
Yeah.
That particular meet or event at that time, because you've got to bounce back to do
so.
Well,
yeah. So
one.
Putting the event in a larger context of how do I move forward? I think that's what's great about sports and being part of a team. Yeah. Is recovering from losses. Yeah. And celebrating the rewards. So what were you rewarded for and becoming known for? It sounds like gymnastics. Was there anything else?
I mean, there's a lot of it when I think about it now, it's not only gymnastics, but it's definitely about being independent and driven. Having the goals of that internal achievement and kind of where I want to strive forward. I mean, I remember early when I started with Time Inc. I mean, my interview with Time Inc. The gentleman who interviewed me had talked about putting, you know, working with potentially tools, meaning like a screwdriver or a wrench, because we were putting up magazine pockets on an actual fixture.
Because this is Time magazine, right?
What?
Is this Time magazine?
Yeah. And at that point, I thought, oh, well, of course I can do this. You know, why wouldn't I be able to do it? So it's kind of always like, you know, you push me a little bit where I'm like, can you do it? And I'm like, well, of course I can do it. It's the competitive spirit I have. So I do have that definitely competitive spirit that I'm known for.
Which you can thank your brothers for. It started early.
Yes, it did start early. Because I am looking for that win-win situation.
Yeah.
That I want. I mean, I always have been super collaborative. And when I work with retailers, as we'll talk about in the future, I do want everybody to win.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it feels good. So, and what key mentors showed up in your life as you were going along in your 20s and 30s?
I mean, my first mentor probably goes back to my gymnastics days, because she just really guided me, as she's well as Price. You know, when it's your first mentor, it's all about, you know, them helping you through the process, as well as the compliments that are there. I think when I went into really my 20s and 30s, about 3 months into my first job out of college, our company had restructured and I was given a new boss. And my new boss was Dorothy. And it was just her leadership style, her thought leadership that really shaped me into the person and the leader that I am today. Wow. And she was a wonderful woman. I mean, she mentored me, she coached me, she believed in the power of yourself and how you support others. You know, I remember there's a lot of different notes that she would put, you know, good job, or the sense of achievement, or the praise that to give your employees to have them keep going. Mm. So a lot of my early learning and timing in my career and what shaped me was definitely from Dorothy. I mean, since then I have another really great mentor of mine who happens to be a really good friend of mine was, really in my last role at Time Inc. He was my boss. And again, he was super collaborative, super supportive. I could call him up after a retailer meeting and just bounce all these ideas off of him and how we could look at the business a little bit differently, or how we improve the business for that retailer. And today, I mean, I call him up today too, and still ask him about a number of different things. Great friendship. Mm-hmm. I would also say probably, you know, absolutely my husband, super supportive. Is he a mentor? He's a mentor in a lot of different ways where I can bounce ideas off of him and problems and solutions and gain his feedback. But having that collaborative relationship makes a difference. I mean, early on, he used to laugh at me at how much I would come home from work or a business conference or a meeting. And I think I just kept going, probably like this, right? I keep talking. it's just my nature that I'm like, I just want to tell everybody everything.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's really great.
So you acquired a business degree at Iowa State University and an MBA at the University of Phoenix. You went from territory manager, assistant director manager, and district manager to national account manager and director of bookstore sales, and then to director of national accounts and VP of national accounts, all at Time Inc., right?
Yes.
So what stood out the most during those 31 years?
I had a fabulous career. I mean, I loved Time Inc. It was really the people and our division. Our division was, as you're going through a grocery store and you see the magazines right at the checkout counter, it was those magazines that our division was responsible for. It was called the newsstand. And the people in our division were, I mean, unbelievably nice, generous with their time, collaborative. We all wanted to help each other. And I think this is where that win-win comes from. We all wanted to win together. Mm. And it was really that, the environment. I mean, you mentioned all my positions. I think a lot of it has to do with I did have a goal. Every 2 to 3 years, I was promoted. I enjoyed the company.
Yeah.
And, you know, at one point in my career, I think probably the I mean, what stood out probably a lot of it was when I received what we had called our traditional green jacket that you receive if you're a National Account Manager Award at one of our conferences. So to have that, talk about my mentor at the time was Dorothy. I mean, it was really special. And I really enjoyed that retailer relationship and calling on retailers. And that is what elevated me through my career.
Sure. And when did you meet Howard and start a family, like raising Maggie and Matt?
I met Howard in college. It was our last year of college, our fourth year of college. And, you know, we started dating. I was in the four-year plan. Howard was in the five-year plan. So I started working in Des Moines. And, you know, we got married a few years later, moved to Atlanta, then moved up to Minneapolis. And once we were here in Minneapolis is when we decided that we were going to start our family and really raise the kids here ever since.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds just, you know, it sounds like a storybook, right, of how things, you know, should go in a person's career, right, that rarely we experience. And when you transitioned from corporate living to an entrepreneurial lifestyle, part of your transition, it was partnering with Tiger Retail. Can you tell us a little bit about the product categories you decided to focus on and how the relationship started and where it is now?
Absolutely. So when I left corporate, it was really beginning that new journey. And shortly after I started that new journey and deciding, you know, do I stay in consumer goods, consumer services, consulting, you know, which is really that journey looking, a broker in Arkansas approached me. She had started her business a couple of years prior, and she was already bringing products to market at Walmart and Sam's. And she was interested in that my target expertise. So we really started talking and formed more of a strategic partnership where we bring products to Walmart, Sam's, Target, and then we brought in Costco. The majority of our partnership does focus on food and beverage products. We have a few pet, home essentials, and home improvement products. The business is going great. I mean, retailers now are open and interested in new products again. You know, we went through COVID where they were just maintaining what was on supply chain at the time.
Yeah.
So relationship I have with Sharon is great. And it's nice to be able to work together and talk about different products and bring different categories into the partnership.
So is she a client of your business or retail partner solutions, or tell us how that works together with your business?
Yeah, so she is a client of my business. So Retail Partner Solutions is the overall company. And then the strategic partnership I have with Sharon does drive some of the products that I bring into Retail Partner Solutions as we work together, because she'll work separately on the Walmart and Sam's, and I'll work on the Target and Costco piece.
So it's good to have some collaborative partners in the work that you do. It really gives clients a lot of choices to align people with the expertise that you need. Because each big box store has such a different process and the timelines. I was really surprised.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Everybody kind of works independently of their own and who they want to work with in terms of even if they work with distributors or how to bring the product to market. So it's nice having that expertise on different retailers and then being able to collaborate the differences or where we see the similarities are.
And where you and I met, we started our strategic mentoring relationship in October of 2019. You were referred to me through a mutual friend of ours. And I would like to reinforce the importance of people getting a mentor and coach early in the formation of their business. What has been your experience working with me? Or, you know, I mean, yeah. I'm less trying to tout my horn. I'm more trying to reinforce the learning of working with a mentor, but feel free to, you know, have full rein in how you want to answer that question.
Yes, I would say wholeheartedly, you need really a mentor or someone really to help you, guide you through this entrepreneur space. You have been amazing for me. I was at a point in my business where I kind of had that to-do list that was overwhelming. I had great ideas, but I didn't know how to structure it. And I didn't really know how it was easy to structure and how I could look at going forward in the entrepreneur space. So you have, raised me to new levels and new heights and had me consider things and different points of view and how the business can go forward and future business opportunities that I hadn't necessarily thought of in the beginning.
Terrific. Thank you so much for that. It speaks to your courage to take such a big leap after such a long corporate, successes to start up your own venture, having no experience whatsoever, knowing very few people who have been entrepreneurs. So describe how you adapted your vision for Retail Partner Solutions during March of 2020 when the COVID pandemic hit the Midwest and you kept going.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, when I started my business in October of 19, I actually had a product that was going to go in a retailer and got the approval in early February. And because, a month later COVID hit, that product launch had been delayed for another year. So it did, make me think and regroup how I'm going to go forward during COVID. I had just attended two in January, the Winter Fancy Food Show, and had a number of brands we were approaching for representation at Target. And then when COVID hit, I really had to pivot and transition and think about, it's not about selling products to retailers, it's really about building relationships. You're always building relationships, but it's different this time. Whereas you really had to, the buyers themselves were super busy. They were currently trying to maintain their own supply chain. And it was really just either giving encouragement or, really looking at how you can help them in their business strategy because of the time that we were in. So it did give me time at that point for Retail Partner Solutions to build my business, to finalize different marketing materials. I hadn't created a website yet, gave me the opportunity to create the website. Really, yeah. Even with you, continuing our mentoring conversations, of things now, once we do open up, how I will look at the business differently or looking at it to go forward. And it was really helping the brands too, build their awareness. It gave, this is a perfect time for them to start building their own awareness strategies, yeah. Whether it's social, whether it's on online platforms, to go forward too for that next, waiting for 2021 to hit.
Yeah. And what stands out the most for you when you think of a corporate mindset versus an entrepreneurial mindset and acquiring one?
This was something we talked about early on. Yes, I remember some of our conversations. Because the corporate mindset is the employee mindset, which is very different from the entrepreneur mindset. I mean, there was times, I think, where you and I laughed about it, but it was scary and it was intimidating. And I'm like, okay, what's that, challenging kind of shift that I'm going to have to really think about differently? I can tell you, and probably a lot of entrepreneurs would tell you, that one of the biggest obstacles is really kind of thinking when you're an employee or corporate versus entrepreneur isn't necessarily the mindset or the commitment. It's all of, not the mindset, the commitment or the money. It's about the mindset. It's really thinking a little bit differently. And that you're creating a business. So as you create the business, you think about kind of how you're leaving that independent paycheck behind. You no longer have the approvals, right, of bosses and coworkers, mm-hmm. or a whole team of resources. You're I don't want to say you are a business of one, and you do have your own resources to tap into, you know, like I tapped into yourself, or I tapped into the Women's Own Business community. But it's a lot different than being able to say, hey, I've got a legal contract. I give it to the legal department when you're in a corporate world. And this time you're the person who is that legal department, who is that finance department, who is that tax department. You know, you're all the departments within the company.
Yeah.
And you really have to kind of think about it a little bit differently and how you want to go about your business. It really comes down to two, jumping in, you know, jumping into that world of calculated uncertainty. And the world of kind of, you need to trust yourself and go forward. When we talk about the business, and we'll talk about, you know, how long I took before I got the name, you know, that's some of the things that probably I look back today and I'm like, okay, that was a mistake. I tell now everybody, don't think about it that hard, but you do have to jump in. Absolutely.
Yeah. You're an example how one can learn the entrepreneurial mindset. So what was the pieces in taking the first steps? What were critical to feeling like you're stepping in the right direction?
For me, it was having conversations with others and really trusting others and asking for help. Very good friends of ours. Her husband is an entrepreneur, has his own business for the last 10 years. And he literally took me under his wing, said, Ann, come over for the day or for a couple hours. And he walked me through everything of really, how do I start it? From getting the LLC, the small business, what do I have to do next? And helped me kind of through that process. And I think it just goes back to, there's so many people that are willing to help and share their knowledge. It's trusting them and asking for it. And really creating and collaborating, like I said, with other entrepreneurs. For me, that was a big step.
Yeah. Very good. Is there anything else that you would like to add in hiring a mentor, and what are in some of the other benefits of working with a business and life mentor? Is there anything else you want to share regarding that? And we'll finish out our conversation there.
I think as starting out as an entrepreneur, it's a necessary part of your board. I mean, we all talk about, right, everybody has a board of directors, whether you're in corporate or whether you're an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur, you think about your legal staff or your tax accountant. A mentor is part of it. I mean, you need a mentor as part of your board of directors. And I think it's really important that I have you as a great mentor as we go forward and as part of my board of directors, that I can bounce ideas off of. I can collaborate and talk about, you know, maybe a business issues that I have, that it's kind of your, unbiased third party that you need somebody to talk to. So
yeah.
I just think it's always important to have a mentor and to have somebody that you can work with and feel free to have those conversations.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's some other questions that we can talk about too that will fit nicely into our second conversation, which is, you know, focusing on continuing to build out your expertise of getting your products into big box retailers. And you have a lot to say about that. So I'm excited to have you back for another conversation.
Well, I'm excited to be back. I think it'll be a fun conversation when we talk about big box.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, thanks for being here. Thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. And thank you for tuning in. We'll see you all next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a WeMentor lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.